Your package says delivered, but delivered where exactly? The hallway? The lobby? Your neighbor's apartment? Instead of playing detective with your deliveries, get a mailbox at the UPS store. We'll sign for your packages, text you when they arrive, and keep your deliveries low-key under lock and key. Get 3 months free mailbox services with a new annual agreement at the UPS store. For full details and to get your coupon, visit the upsstore.com/offer.
Off the Ball Daily,
a home for your favorite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Yeah, I watched Formula One. I love Formula One. I watched every race. I was lucky to be there in part of that world. I still work for the French TV Canal Plus.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
Off the Ball Breakfast
with Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie, subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Quinny, Susanna Mullen, good morning.
How are you?
Good morning, guys.
I want to say this is the norm now for Ireland beating Italy in the Women's Six Nations, but there was an expectation heading into this game, Susanna, and they delivered.
They did, yeah. I don't know if the expectation was to perform as well as they did. Scott Beaman going into the game, the head coach, was very much like, this is a improved Italy side. We're not looking at that score from last year at all. We're going in kind of all guns blazing. And then that first half, they just absolutely ran away with it. Now, questions around the second half in terms of, like, we still haven't seen an 80-minute performance from them, the Six Nations. Obviously, there's only been two games, so that's a bit of a stretch, but you would have liked them to keep that domination going through the full 80 leading into France next weekend. But that's a nitpicking, like it was. Yeah, it was a much improved performance.
Did you take more positives than negatives after the England game? Because there was a few positive and encouraging statistics emanating from that match. Like the 33-12 defeat was the closest the margin had been in a decade. England haven't lost in the Six Nations, what, 2018? But at the same time, Ireland were what? What were they, 28-0 down in that game? It took them before they scored. Yeah, before they scored
21-0 at halftime. Yeah,
yeah, before they scored the first try. So it felt like going into the, it was kind of, let's see what happens here in Galway first to talk about where Scott Beaman's side are. But at the moment, it just feels like it's in a really good place. And we actually bring this conversation on to where they can improve Ireland in terms of the depth.
Obviously, there were positives to take from Twickenham, but I was really frustrated, and I spoke about that here last week, that they did it to themselves in a way. With the handling errors, unforced errors in that first half in Twickenham, and England weren't at their best and they knew that. So it was a real opportunity to potentially get even closer to the world champions, and they let themselves down rather than being outplayed by a really, really good side. But that's in this game against Italy where we saw a complete flip. Like, apart from the first 10 minutes, which were a bit nervy because there was a lot of penalties again, and I think Italy did the exact same as England did. They kicked to the corner, Moll scored a try, and I was going, oh God, here we go again. But they straightened it out after 10 minutes, no more unforced errors, and we really saw there, like, what they can do in attack. That third Bavin Parsons try on the stroke of half-time, where there was about four of offloads, Aoife Wafer was involved, Robin O'Connor, the debutante, was involved on the wing, and then Bavin finished it off on her opposite wing, which we rarely see in the women's game, or in the Irish women's game. We need to see a lot more the wingers working off their wing. That, to me, I was kind of sat back in the stands going, whoa, okay, we actually have that kind of attack in our locker. And it wasn't something I'd maybe seen from this Irish team in a while. And I think that's really exciting, that when we can eliminate the errors, we actually have this attack to fall back on. But also, England hammered Scotland 84-7 at the weekend, which, I don't know, does that put into context our game against them a little bit? In that it wasn't, I mean, it wasn't a bad loss in the first place. As you said, margins got smaller and smaller, but that it was an even better performance than maybe we gave them credit for.
Yeah. What do you think, Quinny?
Yeah, definitely. I think, obviously, we were trying to pick the bones out of that loss to England, and the gap is definitely closed. You shouldn't accept that that's fine. I think that's what we were kind of talking about last Monday morning, was that, yeah, it's good, but not where you set your standards. And we've seen, you know, the development of this team and the improvements. There's certain areas that still to dine at the top table for them. It'll be really interesting going to France at the weekend. you know, where they're at, and if they could get a result away there, making it competitive and close again is not where we're at now. We're looking for wins. It's very difficult for them. France have been a little bit indifferent in their first couple of games, and it's taken them the while, particularly in the second half of both their two victories, to kind of get into gear. So, yeah, there was a very good reaction at the weekend, and a ruthless kind of approach and an energy and a pace to the team that's what you want to see. So they can be very pleased. I think, as Hannah said, there's certainly a couple of defensive lapses and a few things that, again, they should be critical and hard on themselves. But overall, you know, the whole performance, the crowd, the stadium, the way they played, the type of rugby that they played was very, very impressive.
You don't know about the collective display, right? But individually, so you could talk about a few here. Robin O'Connor in her debut, Fabian Parsons' hat-trick, because she was so disappointed by her performance against England as well. She was talking about that in the build-up to this Italy match. Then she scores the three tries. But Dan O'Brien, growing into that position more and more as the lead at 10.
She was excellent. I really thought she was excellent. Her kicking... We know she has a massive boot. That's been her super strength since she like came onto this Irish team. One of the biggest boots I've seen from an Irish women's player, maybe ever. And off the tee as well. Like she got, I don't have it written, maybe like 5 from 8 conversions or something like that. Like, and Dexcom is not an easy place to go and kick off a tee. Like, it's windy.
Although apparently the weather was good.
The conditions were nice. Yes. It was one of the most beautiful days in Scotland's history.
When I asked Scott Beaman, the head coach, about their second half performance, because obviously it was an equal 2 tries apiece in the second half, he said, well, the wind was against us. And I was kind of like, there wasn't a whole lot of wind, but okay, we'll take it. But yeah, her boot has always been fantastic in terms of distance, but we haven't always seen her make the best decisions in terms of where she's kicking. Against England, she was kicking, but it was kind of like, are you kicking for territory? Are you kicking to compete? It was kind of hard to tell what she was trying to do. Against Italy, her boot was such a weapon. She was using it all over the place, short kicks, long kicks, putting them under pressure. They were dropping 3 into their backfield just to cover her threat of her boot. So then there was a load more space in the line to get their forwards, even away for the likes of them, carrying hard. And they made a lot more line breaks than they did against England. But I worry about... It's funny, like, all the talk around this Irish team since the World Cup and now into the Six Nations has been their depth and how much it's growing. And it's true, we can see that across the back row, across the second row, dropping Dorothy Wall, dropping Eve Higgins. Like, to be able to do that, we wouldn't have seen ourselves in that position a year ago. But he doesn't trust anyone else at 10.
Is that okay though, Susanna? Because you've got a superstar.
Yeah, but what if that superstar gets injured?
Well, it's the Johnny Sexton thing, isn't it?
Well, it's more, there's a great one about the legendary quarterback from the Broncos who won eventually, started out with the Colts, Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning, why do we never practice without the other guy, lads? If number 10 doesn't play, we're fucked, and we don't practice fucked. That was the bit. It's like, we have a superstar here. Obviously, you want to develop depth in time for a World Cup and stuff, but right now, you've got to get her in, play her.
But if you're leading 50 to something, whatever it was at halftime, a ridiculous amount of tries, you're not losing that game realistically, would you not just... rest her in with the
maybe there's some S&C stuff that they want to work on. That'd be the only thing. In fairness, I think that look, you there is a bit where a game is won, you make changes, and everybody understands that. But
see, they don't name a backup out half on the bench either. They have Stacey Flood at fullback who will fill in at 10 if something were to happen to Dana, but she rarely ever plays 10. I'm sure she does in training. I'm sure she does reps. But there was a time in the World Cup where Dana had to come off maybe for a yellow card or something, and Stacey filled in, and she did well, but she's not, she doesn't look overly comfortable there because she hasn't played it a lot. I think against Italy they didn't know they were going to win by as much as they did, but had they maybe had a bit more confidence, I would have liked to see Katrina Finn on the bench and have her come on like 60 minutes in and give Dana a rest.
Maybe they do that for one of the two lesser games.
The Wales or Scotland game.
Easy games. Whoa.
Very dangerous, yeah. It's Look, Italy were poor as well. Let's be honest about it. And you've got to get this right and kind of create. And that's the challenge for the coaches here, is to make sure they don't get ahead of themselves, because I know this from experience, whether it's men's or women's game, going to France, even when they're a little bit blasé and a little bit off colour, they can rip you apart. So it's about, enjoying that. And they did enjoy it. And it was lovely to see them, scoring lots of tries and having a real good feel factor. And they've got to work incredibly hard this week. Now, not physically, but tactically, get their kicking game right. One loose kick against France, you're punished. We saw one or two against England cause you awful problems. So in the tight games, you can't afford, and you spoke about Dan O'Brien's improvement there, strategically, she's got to get that right. As you say, you're either going to row Z in the stand, or you're putting a contestable, or you're going distance down the field with a really good kick chase. So, I'll probably hypercritical here. You cannot defend them all like that in the first couple of minutes of the game and concede, that try. They've got to be stronger there, because France will go after their maul there, and that's what they've got to. They've got to be more reactive, quicker, physical, and a little bit frantic in their defence of that. But look, overall, very positive. And look, I'm sure the coaches will analyse the few little pieces that they could be better on. Italy were poor. There was a very much a ruthless energy and pace to their game in the first half. It does fall off a little bit when you have that kind of a lead. So overall, very positive day for them. And the Ireland under-21s as well, big, very strong win for them as well, dominant win. So it was a good day out for women's rugby, and perfect setting, perfect place for the game to be played. And very, very positive, but big test this weekend in France now. And that's the real challenge. If they were to go there and get something, that's a game changer. It's you're stepping across the line now, and you're getting to that level that we didn't see a couple of years ago.
Is your expectation minimum against France that it's a close game? Minimum.
I don't know if that's my expectation. That's what I hope for.
What's your expectation?
I worry. Yeah. I think if they play like they did against Italy in that first half, they could beat France. But if they come under pressure, like Quinny was talking about, I don't think they'll get ahead of themselves. That's not what I'm trying to say. But if they just let the pressure of the situation get to them, because this game has been building up since 7 months ago, since they lost that quarterfinal, and they really, really want to win this. Like, any player I've spoken to over the past month has a big red circle around that France game. And even Aaron was saying it in the press conference after Italy, that they'd be lying if they said that this wasn't a game that they'd been thinking about.
I'm surprised a little bit that they were quite vocal about it. I'd be keeping it internal, to be honest, if it was me. But look, it's a reality what you're saying. And it would be a big moment for them to go and win over there. And
you want them to, but do you think that with all that pressure focused on it, we saw how the pressure hit them in the first half in Twickenham. Like, I'm a bit nervous that, again, the occasion might get to them a little bit.
Yeah, look, France are no slouches. They're a very strong team as well, even though they, as I said, the first half of both their first two games, they would have been frustrated with, but they're a very powerful side, very physical side. So for me, you've got to get the foundation of your set piece right. Your breakdown, your physicality, and maybe show a little bit of pragmatic approach, maybe that you can squeeze the opposition and play percentage rugby. But look, let's see. I'm sure they have plenty of attacking threats now, and it's just utilising that in the right moments. But it's difficult going to France. Yeah. It's a tricky one for them.
I just, I really wish, I know I've spoken about this last year on the show, but I really wish we had a box kick.
Yeah,
in our armour, because we saw it against France in the Six Nations last year. Dan O'Brien would be pinned in her own try line, behind her own try line, trying to exit, and they would just rush. And France are so good at it. They're so aggressive. They'd put like six players just on her, and there was a couple of times she got charged down behind her own posts. And we saw what Italy did. Like, one of their few strengths of their game was that little box kick over the top. Ireland were letting it bounce. They found joy with that three or four times. and breaks through Ireland's midfield. I don't know if they scored off it, but definitely breaks. And France do it really well. And I just wish we had it not only as an attacking threat, but also just as an exit option. I'm worried that they're going to put a lot more pressure on Dana, and she won't have... She was excellent against Italy, but that she won't have that freedom to be excellent because she'll be under so much pressure.
Do you make any changes, actually, for the France game, provided everyone's injury-free?
The wing will be interesting. Do you bring Vicky Elms-Kinlan back in? She was excellent against England in terms of her defence, but then Robin in the air was something we haven't really seen from an Irish winger. Like, she was leaping off the ground and catching balls in the air, which, if you're going to kick and you want to contest, that's really important. So I'd maybe keep her there. I'd leave Ruth Campbell in the second row. I thought she was really good. And Dorothy Wall hasn't performed to what we would have expected of her since coming back into a green jersey. I think I'd keep the... I'm trying to think who was in the team. I think I'd keep the team from Italy rather than the team from England.
Okay. I will hear from Robin O'Connor shortly, but you want to speak with us about the atmosphere.
Yes. Well, it's a really interesting topic that I've heard over the past couple of weeks that I wanted to get your guys' opinion on. Mm-hmm. Is that women's... I'm not saying this before someone comes at me, but the idea is that women's games, the atmosphere is better than men's games. And I was at... When I was at Twickenham, obviously you're working and you're busy and I don't really notice what's going on around me. But I had a friend who went, and this isn't the first time I'd heard it, but she went and she goes to lots of men's Ireland games, Leinster games, whatever. And she just said the atmosphere was incredible. It's a party atmosphere. It was so much better. She had so much fun. And then in the lead up to this game last week, Scott was asked about it. He was asked, you know, we've heard that women's games are better. Why is that? And he kind of said, it's so loud. And the noise just gets louder and louder because everybody is paying attention and everybody is partying. And then he said, because sometimes it's a bit looser, there's not as much structure to the game, there's a few more mistakes, there's a lot more jeopardy. And he said that builds excitement. And just all in all, it's a better experience. But I don't know if that's a fair statement.
Everybody's always giving out about the men's game, right? I find the atmosphere at the men's games pretty good, I have to say, especially when the game is good. No one ever gives out about the atmosphere at an Ireland-England game or an Ireland-France game. It's at the Italy game, everybody's drinking pints. Like, fair enough, we're 40 points up. And I suspect that that has an impact on how people view the men's game. I think it was interesting to get the game out of Dublin. I think you want to talk about that as well. Generally, I think it's a good idea. Are you against it?
I was on my 3-hour drive to Galway.
That's a very Dublin-centric...
Yes, I know, I know. Mean, I was chatting to Dara and he was like, no, it was fantastic. And I was like, right, yeah, that's my Dublin head on my shoulders. I just think it's interesting. I was listening to a podcast on my way there and it was a former Scottish player. And she was saying they can't do it in... So Scotland had their first game in Murrayfield and there was 30,000 there, which was great. But they were saying it'd be great to travel around Scotland because it's what England did back in the day. And it was massive for growing the women's game in terms of getting fans from all over the country. The Scottish player was saying that they can't do it in Scotland because they don't have enough stadiums that are the kind of size of the RDS or the Dexcom or AFDEA, and that they would love it. But I just think it's interesting, like the women's soccer team were obviously in the Aviva at the same time and they don't really travel around the country.
Well, they do. They go to Cork.
They did once in 24, did they?
They have a second game in Cork soon enough, and it was a massive success, wasn't it? They were Páirc Uí Chaoimh, 30,000 at that.
I remember that, but that was like 2 years ago. Whereas the women's rugby team, they never play in Dublin. I just think it's an interesting... Maybe the women's soccer team have felt that they have enough of a fan base. They don't need to do that anymore.
Well, they haven't. They've struggled to sell the Aviva out. I don't know what the crowd was for the Poland game. Did it end up...
I think it was 18,000.
I think getting the team out of Dublin as often as you possibly can, I think having stadiums full as opposed to... So what do we think the crowd's going to be? The women's team are going to play the Aviva, right? In the rugby. which game is it now?
The last game, the Scotland game.
Yeah, so maybe if they're going for something, you'll get a huge crowd at that. But 20,000 at the Aviva. You see the Leinster games at the Aviva and there's 20,000. That in the atmosphere is a bit dead.
Mm.
When the RDS is full, they should try to make that their home base. Or when it's finished, maybe. And when they know they're going to sell 40 or 30,000, move it out.
Yeah, it's just interesting. I understand the idea of spreading the green wave around the country and getting people from all over the country to support you. But those players or those people aren't going to travel to Dublin for a game in a year's time, I don't think. It's more that they go because it's a convenience of the location. So is the aim to fill seats in the RDS come next year, or is the aim just to have more awareness around the team?
I think it's to make the country as connected with the team as possible so that everybody gets an equal opportunity to see it, so that you grow the game in Munster and Connacht and that you're not just Dublin-centric.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not, it sounds like I'm like a stay in Dublin. I'm not, I'm just curious about the different approaches.
That has a novelty factor as well for people if they can, you know, get excited about whatever sport it is, whether it's the women's soccer, men's, the under-20s rugby team playing Cork a lot. That seems to be work incredibly well for them. It's difficult for parents who are, you know, from Belfast, or the Ulster lads that are on the team. They have to drive to Cork and all that. So, but no, I think moving it around is great, and it gives it creates excitement, and it allows local areas, you know, generate their own kind of marketing excitement around it and get their young kids kind of involved in it as well.
Yeah. The women's football team are playing the Netherlands. Their next game is in Portugal in June. So you're against this marketing campaign?
She just doesn't want to drive 3 hours to Galway. Like, that's, she said it.
No,
there.
I would just like them, I think, maybe to have a home that we could see filling out. Now, I agree with you, the Aviva is not that place. So maybe it is wait until the RDS, or it doesn't have to be Dublin. Like, maybe their home is in Cork, or their home is in,
or Dexcom, if they're going to
get, is in Galway. I think it would be good to have a place that they regularly sell out, and people can go back, people can return, because I don't think a lot of the people who go to the one-off games are necessarily traveling around following the team, whereas a lot of people would come from various places to watch the men's team. Maybe now,
people,
I know you can't
compare.
Dublin
might disagree with you and say, well, it's a massive inconvenience for them to follow the team there. So,
is there just not big enough stadiums to host the men?
No, I think moving it around is cool, to be honest. I know the point you're making about creating a bit of a fortress, and we haven't been beaten here in 10 games or 20 games or whatever. That's good. But I think in this current situation, growing a team, trying to grow the sport, get more fans, get more people involved, I think that's just the way it's going to be for a bit. But when the RDS is there, and if they're starting to get consistently near the top level or challenging the likes of England, France, New Zealand, these top teams, I think you'll see games in the RDS or even in the Aviva a bit more.
How many tickets sold for the Scotland game, is it? 16,000 sold.
Is that the latest?
Yeah. So that will be the record that's going to break what happened at the weekend. Yeah, that's the latest. And that's what, a few weeks
but
ago.
But if they beat France, there'll be like
a
massive,
that's a different story, isn't it?
Yeah, that's
a different conversation.
There's so much importance on that France game from that point of view as well, in that this Irish team really need a big win.
Yeah.
Something that people can really get behind. Because we haven't had that since the New Zealand game in WXV3, and that was in the middle of the night. Mm. So although there was a lot of media around it, nobody really watched it. Mm. So I feel like they need something massive that will kind of, people will go, whoa.
Yeah. All right, Susanna, thanks a minute.
Thank you.
You mentioned Robin O'Connor there a while ago on her debut scoring a try. Let's hear from her.
First cap, obviously, just how happy are you to have earned it, and how to go out there?
It was such a special day for me. I was so excited going out onto the pitch, and then it was really special having my family there as well. It's just a very emotional day, and I'm just beyond delighted.
Has it been a long time coming for you, or?
Yeah, no, it's something I've worked towards for a very long time. It's just been a dream I've had since I was very young, and it's just a pinch me moment, I suppose. And yeah,
And to get a try on your debut, like, could you have imagined anything better?
No, I honestly couldn't. Like, I was absolutely delighted with myself, and then all the girls came to celebrate with me. It was really special.
You've got to go sing a song now, I presume, as all the debutantes do. Do you have any idea what you'll sing?
Yeah, I actually just sang.
No way!
Yeah, give me a second eye. That was so. Yeah,
that's a hard song.
It is, yeah, but everybody joined in immediately, so I was thankful for that. So,
do you have initiations? Do you have any songs to sing?
Yeah, you would have to when you get capped. Oh, yeah. Sing a song.
Do you remember yours?
Cannot remember. Some sort of a song. I wouldn't be a great singer.
What, like, what was what's in your repertoire?
That is a good question, though. I genuinely cannot remember.
Is it infuriating for Munster that they're able to put in a performance as complete as the one that they just did at the weekend, and it's out of keeping with the last 2 months of performances they've produced?
Is it infuriating for them or for the fans?
For everybody. The change is so wild that, like, so maybe the second game in South Africa where they still lost but put in a better performance, is there's some form line from there to here. But the first one in South Africa, and it's just, the inconsistency is maddening.
It is maddening. I'm sure it's maddening for you know, them as well at times. They've made a lot of changes every game. It's 8, 7, 8, 9 changes every week, every time. And I think Clayton McMillan, it hasn't helped him. I understand at the start, I had him on the podcast, I've said this, maybe pre-Christmas, about that, that plan to make so many changes nearly every game.
Yeah.
And he spoke about trying to stay fresh, keep the players hungry, getting to know guys. Some changes were necessary when players didn't play well. My own opinion of that is sometimes you have a poor game or you mightn't perform to the level that you're expected. But it's very difficult if you haven't played in a few weeks and you're dropped into a game and suddenly you've got to play well or else you're gone again for another period of time, and we've seen a bit of that, and I think that's that hasn't helped, because I think you can build consistency of performance and learn from your mistakes by, I know you've got to use your squad, but I think of all the provinces we've seen very consistently, if you go back right to the start, 7, 8 changes every time, and it hasn't helped. It does beg the question why they can get a performance like that. And they've been very few and far between. I think at the start of the season, they won the first 5 league games. Cardiff and Edinburgh, I thought, were, Munster were average, even though they got the results. They could have lost both those games. They were excellent against Leinster. The first half against the Stormers, they were outstanding the way they played. They were 21-6 up at, or 21-5 or up at halftime, something like that, or 6, and they lost that game. And it's been very, you know, the top level performances have been few, consistently over an 80 minute period. Benetton were, yeah, poor at times, but still had a lot of very good players in the field. And I just think that, yeah, over the 80 minutes, Munster were very shrewd. What impressed me the most was just making good, simple decisions and consistently putting the opposition under pressure when they had the ball and when they didn't have the ball. So they kicked very intelligently as well, and Crowley and Casey have made a huge difference in the last few weeks, and we've seen that. Their performances have been very, very consistent. But it is frustrating. Why did they do that? How did they go away from home? They've lost their last 6 on the road. I think the last win was away in Ospreys in December. So to score 7 tries and look really strong and robust. Mm. They looked, their body language seemed to be a bit different. The week they had, obviously, I'm sure there was a few honesty calls and, you know, desperation shouldn't be needed. It is helpful sometimes, desperation, but, you know, the point we're making here, Gerard, and I'm making is they're better than that, and they've been so inconsistent at times. You know, you go to Belfast there in the start of January, and it was horrendous performance, 28-3 or 28-3,
yeah.
You know, they have a few of those on their CV now from this year, and so it was and lots of these team sheets that have come out in the last few months, I've looked at them and said, that's a good team, that's a decent team.
Good strength and depth, great bench.
Yeah, so it's not as if he's played a load of guys that I've gone, five of these guys are useless or they shouldn't be there or whatever. By and large, you know, I've consistently said they need more quality, but a lot of players have underperformed, and there's maybe a little bit of mitigation that someone like Dermot Kilgallen has been in the team, out of the team, injured, comes back for a game. I think he's a very good player. But like when you come back in for one game after 2 months of not playing,
you can't build any.
Well, it's hard if the team in general are under pressure and you make a mistake or two and you're gone, you kind of can be written off very easily at times. And I think it's difficult for players to find form. And Saturday night, they were really good.
Their next games are Munster, Ulster on this coming Saturday, and then the 9th of May, it's in Dexcom against Connacht, a resurgent Connacht after their performance against Stormers at the weekend. So if they can win those two games, then it would be safe to say that some kind of corner has been turned. But no one is back in Munster to win the two games just yet on the basis of the good performance, bad performance, good performance, bad performance. Show us, don't tell us, really is what we need from Munster for the rest of the season.
Yeah, they've got to try and back it up now, and I think I don't think we'll see as many changes in the team in the next few weeks. I think the vast majority of that team that played the other night, you'll see them fairly regularly now in those four games. Obviously, with what everything that happened last week, and it's still there, and it'll be interesting to see how this week plays out. They've got to focus on trying to get a performance. Ulster didn't do themselves any favours in the sense of rotation and Richie Murphy's ability to maybe rest players next weekend.
He's got to go full bore as well.
With a view to playing a semi-final of a Challenge Cup the week after at home, which you'd fancy Ulster to maybe get into a final. Exeter are a very strong team, but, you know, I think Ulster have a great chance of being in a Challenge Cup final. And I think there was a hope, and you have to do some rotation. It's just you cannot keep playing guys week after week and trying to have them fresh. So I think there was a hope that Ulster would get a result against Leinster. We have to apologise because we spoke here on Friday morning. You were here Friday morning.
Oh, yeah.
We questioned maybe the Leinster selection, didn't we?
Yeah, well, I didn't.
It was
on the record on the show that it was questioned. Yeah, it was.
Not in a heavy-handed way, but it was like a little bit, oh, this is Leinster not, they're not top of the pile here, and they don't have a lot of wriggle room to lose matches, and it's a risky one going up against a strong Ulster side. 50 minutes, it was their best performance of the season. I think they were outstanding and blew Ulster away. Ulster came back. So rotation sometimes it has to happen. And I think they would have been so pleased with that result in Belfast and Leinster. But for Ulster, losing in a game that you thought maybe they'd get a result and that they could do a bit of rotation for the game down in Tone Park next Saturday. That's an interesting one now for Richie Murphy. What does he do here? You know, you're balancing, going down and playing.
You go and you try and never give a sucker an even break. You cause them all the trouble.
Okay, but what you do then the week after, then you're basically 3 weeks on the bounce for guys with bangs, knocks. Look, I'm sure I would have suspected before the weekend if they'd beaten Leinster,
they would have rested more against...
Yeah, and they would have said, look, right, we just cannot sustain that emotional high pitch for 3 weeks in the bounce. They've put themselves in a little bit of a tricky position. they have got, yeah, then they're at home to the Stormers and home to Glasgow. So they have a little bit of comfort with their last two games where they have two home games. Yeah. So, but Ulster are in a position, and still are, they're fifth. They were third before the weekend. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how Munster react themselves this weekend and can they back it up. Story of the weekend, though, has Connacht. To be Connacht. Incredible performance. I just think the way they're playing, and I know they lost against Montpellier the previous week, and that was probably very, very disappointing. I think a bit of power toll there. But the way they played here on Saturday was incredibly impressive. With so many young players as well. There's no Bundiaki in that midfield, you know, bashing people. It was Cathal Ford and John Devine. Mm. John Devine was brilliant. Sean Nocton at 10. You know, when you had the likes of Matthew Victory, Billy Bowe and these guys, youngsters, you know, Hugh Gavin, Harry West, loads of young players there. And look, there's no point getting carried away here. It's the reaction will be see how they get on against the Lions. But this is a real landmark performance and yeah. win. And like it can be huge for them and their development going forward. And obviously, the bad news for Connacht at the weekend after getting such a good result, 5 points, all the teams above them won. They would have been hoping some results could have went their way. Yeah, so they're ninth. But they've put themselves in a hunt, and probably 2 months ago, Cullum, we would have, you know, would have been talking about their season. Is that their sixth league victory in a row, which has turned their season around. And you're seeing the fruition of what Lancaster is doing there and the way they're playing, the pace, the accuracy, the offloading. So it was a fantastic performance, and it should give everyone in Connacht real hope and heart that there's a lot of these young players. Another player who's really started to impress me is Sam Illo. He's so dynamic, he's powerful, and I remember watching him against was it the Sharks a few weeks ago, and just thinking he was up against Oxenche, and his scrummaging was holding his own. So I think he's improved dramatically, and his ability around the field is very good as well. Very exciting prospect who's taken a little bit of time.
Yeah,
I'm not saying he's a finished article, but he's starting games for Connacht now and playing really well for them.
Low-key, Jordan Larmour renewed his contract with Leinster. There had been speculation that he was going to go to Connacht as well, but so there is an infusion of some of those Leinster lads over to Connacht, maybe fewer than we thought, or maybe they feel like they've got depth at the wing positions and they don't need Larmour and they'll be able to strengthen elsewhere. But it does feel like whatever happens to the rest of the season, they're incredibly well set up next year.
Yeah, they are. They've some very talented players.
Well, European proper top tier.
Yeah, I think, look, if the four provinces got into the top eight and were playing in Europe next year, it'd be a massive boost for Ireland as well, going into kind of World Cup year and all that, World Cup season. I think there's a bit to go. Obviously, Connacht have to play the Lions, who have been fantastic themselves recently and very, very powerful, well-balanced side. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they get on at the weekend. But they put themselves right in the hunt. Cardiff play Ospreys. So certainly Munster, Connacht will be hoping that maybe the Ospreys can knock Cardiff off there. The Scarlets play Bulls, so they'll be hoping the Scarlets can get a win against the Bulls, who really flexed their muscles at the weekend away to the Dragons on Friday night. They won 47-7, I think. So, it's heating up a little bit there. Connacht are in ninth, but I think it was a positive weekend for both Connacht and Munster. Leinster, not so much for Ulster.
Just on Connacht and Munster seasons, right? Munster are actually 2 points better off than Connacht. They're in sixth place to Connacht's ninth that we just mentioned. But the perception around both of them is completely, widely different. It feels like Connacht are having a far superior season than Munster. Maybe is that just modern historical?
It's just recent results, I think, and performances. And I think then you've just too many of those kind of big, disappointing, deflating losses for Munster.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think
it's
that's
manner,
it.
The results.
Yeah, so yeah. they both lost six, and they in the yeah they've won nine each, and Connacht have won eight. Yeah, so.
I think it's just
the recent results and recent performances, and Munster on the back of the loss to Exeter, the 45-0 loss to Sharks. You know, it's in recent memory.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of them in there. So yeah, look, I think the importance of being in Europe, it's really significant from a financial point of view for any teams involved.
And what about Ulster's performance down to? Because there was one change, I think that was enforced, wasn't it, through injury against Leinster. And they came back very well in the second half. Like, if they had another maybe 10 minutes of that match to go, it could have been a different result.
Yeah, they did respond. So they were slow out of the blocks, and I think that would probably frustrate Richie Murphy. And it's a kind of a part of a steep kind of learning situation there where you're trying to develop that ruthless kind of standard week after week. Mm. Leinster were brilliant.
They were.
And I think they probably watched the show on Friday morning and played it to the players when we were talking about
certainly.
You're claiming credit.
Particularly
right?
The forward pack not being, you know, not having that strength and depth there to go up to Belfast. And they were brilliant. James Culhane, thought he had a great game and was very, very powerful. But Jimmy O'Brien outstanding in the wing. Henshaw was really, really good, and Sam Prendergast.
Yeah, he's getting a lot of abuse. Yeah,
he was brilliant.
Very well.
Yeah, played really well, but the forwards up front were
Max Egan got a 20-minute red as well.
It was a red. And I think he'd take it as well. You know, and say. It was nice to see him apologise pretty much straight away.
It
wasn't an intentional one, but Leinster were very, very good, and maybe Ulster just maybe expected it to happen a little bit and were shocked. They seemed shocked, and obviously they had that reaction near the end and came back and got themselves right back into the game, but Leinster had done too much at that stage.
Seamus Flanagan's listening in there. How are you feeling about Tip?
We're a bit slow out of the blocks. Don't be too hard on us now, Seamus, anyway. And look, it's again, Munster Championship is just chaotic, and you know, the All-Ireland champions, they mightn't come out of Munster. It's the way we've seen in the last couple of years. Look at Clare the year before. So
Waterford this weekend happens. Huge.
Early days. Yeah,
all right,
I hope Seamus is relaxing and enjoying himself anyway now, and not stressing too much about
the weekend
anymore.
Off there anyway. Yeah. All right, thanks a bit.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50-milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150-milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.